Good afternoon. We have a bit of a reputation for starting on time, so I wanted to start before it goes to 12:31. I'd like to welcome everyone today to our fourth in the Campus Community Lunch and Learn series. My name's Robin Wiltshire. I'm one of the co-chairs of the Campus Community Committee. The Lunch and Learn series is one of the events that the Campus Community Committee organizes to bring the McGill community together. Our committee is composed of volunteer faculty, staff, students, and retirees, and we're always looking to broaden our volunteer base to ensure that the events that we organize are engaging for the whole McGill community. If anyone's interested in volunteering, please do get in touch with me. We have a lot of fun. Sometimes we work a bit hard, but it's all rewarding, and it's all for the good of McGill and our esprit de corps, so I'd really appreciate hearing from some of you. We're pleased to see a great turnout today. All of these lunch and learns are filled almost from the moment that that registration is open, and it's great to see so much interest in them. We have a couple of more lunch and learns scheduled for this semester. The next one it's on the February 18th, and it features Gordon Foote from the Faculty of Music, and he's going to talk about, I hope you picked up a brochure, What Is This Thing Called Jazz, and that promises to be a very entertaining talk. You also recently received an invitation to a Valentine's dance being held at Mac Campus on February 11th. You can find out more about all of the events of the campus community on our website, which is off the McGill main page, and it's just /campus community, as one word. We're very pleased to welcome our guest speaker today, Judith Campbell-Gordon. Professor Campbell-Gordon is a McGill grad in physiology and dietetics, and she has 12 years of experience instructing in nutritional food preparation and in food safety, and she's with the McGill School of Dietetics and Human Nutrition. She looks forward to the completion of a new state-of-the-art facility at Mac Campus. I don't know if any of you have heard about it, but I'm looking forward actually to maybe organizing some tours out to see it when it's finally completed. This facility will equip the campus to teach future dietitians and help them with health promotion, communication skills, and quality food services education. Understandably, Professor Campbell-Gordon reports loving every aspect of her job, as many of us have the benefit of doing here at McGill. She's very active in advising freshman students. She teaches culinary skills, enjoys multicultural flavors. I'm sure we're all more than interested in hearing more about that. And she's rewarded by seeing our students become professionals in their field. Today, Professor Campbell-Gordon will provide us with practical nutritional direction to help us, protect our loved ones from different kinds of pandemics, and hopefully some healthy eating habits which will help you all avoid catching whatever it is that I've come down to. The title of her talk today is Foods to Live By in a Time of Nutritional Epidemics. Professor Campbell-Gordon will leave sometime at the end of her talk for questions. And so if before you ask a question, if you could just hit the button on the microphone in front of you so that everyone can hear the question. And for those of you seated in the back, there's a roving microphone. Jesse over here will have a roving microphone so that he'll be able to come and share the mic with you so everyone will be able to hear your question. So, without further ado, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you. And I must admit that I'm not technically a professor. I'm a registered dietitian. And okay, great. So it's a pleasure for me to speak to you today. Thank you for your strong interest. When I heard how quickly you signed up for the session, I knew that you expected a lot from me, so I do hope that I will give you some practical advice and that you'll enjoy what I'm going to present to you. It's been over 20 years that I attended classes in this very building, so it brings back some fond memories. After that, I went on to pursue my first interest, which I had in high school, which was to study nutrition and to study food. And so now I do teach students, and so I'm also taking up some food photography, and so I'm tying in some art into my work, finally. So the purpose of my talk is to provide some practical direction in a time where the epidemics are prevalent for obesity and type 2 diabetes. So, first of all, I'll give you an overview that my presentation will include a look at a WHO report and some other evidence, what the current world situation is now, some of the predictions that are published, and some recommendations. I'll also take a look at some current nutritional guidelines that are laid out in our food guides in Canada, the States, and other food guides. I'll also take a quick look at some Quebec habits. These are very recent studies, how we're doing in Quebec, and some recommendations for a brighter future. And since a picture is worth a thousand words, you'll get to see a few illustrations that will hopefully inspire you. So the report from the WHO was entitled Diet, Nutrition, and the Prevention of Chronic Diseases. It's from 2003. And before I talk about better food choices, I want us to look at the information in this report. So international experts worldwide put together some scientific information proving that there is a relationship between diet, nutrition, and chronic diseases. And these include obesity and type 2 diabetes, which I'll focus on in my talk. The epidemics of obesity and diabetes were found in most countries around the world, even where malnutrition exists. So for example, and I've heard this from some PhD students that I know at the McDonald campus, they have seen themselves the evidence of this. They see people who are stunted, very short, but that are now suffering from overnutrition. So they were malnourished and now they're overnourished. And it's an even greater challenge when they're not very tall. Recommendations were put forth in this report, so I'm going to be summarizing them throughout my talk. So they also present the information about diet and activity. So along with economic development over the last 30 to 50 years, there has been a worldwide increase in the consumption of diets that are energy dense, so a lot of energy in less volume, a high fat, especially saturated fat intake, animal protein, more animal protein, and more less unrefined carbohydrates, which means that there are less whole grains. Carbohydrates are, the refined ones are, for example, the white flour and sugar. And there's also, at the same time, been a worldwide decrease in physical energy expenditure. And this is at work as much as in leisure. There's less physical work involved in most of our jobs, and there's also less time for leisure and less sports in general. So, also these chronic diseases are not only of the rich. In the past, they were seen as people got richer, they had the means to buy more expensive foods, and so chronic diseases were seen to be that of the rich. These diseases are largely preventable. Others than obesity and diabetes are cardiovascular disease, hypertension, stroke, and some cancers. The cardiovascular disease, hypertension, and stroke are very tied in with obesity and diabetes, so I'll focus on these. Being overweight, obese, type 2 diabetes, over the past 20 years has been appearing more and more in younger people. So we now have teenagers who are being diagnosed with what we used to call adult onset diabetes. So now we refer to it as type 2 diabetes. It really hits home, and the seriousness of it strikes us when we see that now we are predicting that this generation of children, if nothing is done about the epidemic of obesity, will actually have a shorter lifespan than their parents, and it could be 5 years. This is in the last two centuries, we have had increasing lifespans from generation to generation, and now because of these epidemics, we may actually start seeing a shortening in life expectancy. For diabetes, the incidence is predicted to double by the year 2025. This is very much related to waist measurements and central adiposity, meaning a lot of body fat stored around the stomach, which is related to insulin resistance. So in type 2 diabetes, because of the extra weight, the body is not responding to the insulin that it's producing, and so it produces more insulin and there's resistance, blood sugars go high, and then extra medication is needed to control this. And having all this insulin and other factors like high blood pressure is also not good for the cardiovascular system. Looking at diet more closely, once again, many countries are replacing traditional plant-based diets with animal-based diets, energy-dense, high in fat and sugar, and diets that are low in fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and fibers, at the expense of their traditional staples. Okay, so my hometown is full of vendors of these types of foods. Certainly, a lot of people are getting calories for their money. In case you have the misconception that dietitians never eat these kind of foods, we do not eat perfectly. But when this becomes the norm, more often than not, then we have a problem and our health suffers. I had to find someone to help me eat all this after I took the picture. The diet cola might not be such a bad idea. We laugh when someone has a meal so full of calories and then they order a diet cola. Is it going to be make a big, big difference? But it happens that drinks that are high in free sugars, actually our body has difficulty compensating for those calories. So when we drink calories in forms of a liquid, free sugars in a liquid form, our body doesn't feel full in order to be able to reduce the consumption of other foods. So it's best to avoid drinks that have free sugars in them. And they are actually related, like soft drinks, are directly related to obesity. We'll see later. So another article was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition in 2003 as well, trying to tell us what should be on our plates. So a plant-based diet, what does it look like? So these foods are common staples in traditional Mediterranean and Asian regions. So we should try to eat more like them or examine how many plant foods they incorporate into their day. Despite the different amounts of total fat, some Mediterranean regions consume quite a lot of olive oil. They still do have less obesity and heart disease. So what's most important is the large amount of fruits, vegetables, legumes. Legumes are not vegetables. Legumes are dried beans, like kidneys, lentils, lentils. You'll see some different pictures. And whole grains, nuts, and we should consume less meat. So focusing more on the plant foods, trying to get our proteins from there rather than from animal foods. It's believed that these traditional plant diets have contributed to longevity in these countries. Okay. We should have a diet that has a high glycemic load. We want a low glycemic load, so we do not want foods that are going to be absorbed quickly, release a lot of sugars into our blood. Okay, so those are related with high serum lipids and cardiovascular disease. So one strategy for reducing the glycemic load is to replace grains with whole grains and legumes. So your refined foods should be replaced with some foods that have some fiber along with it. The benefits of these diets are due to many factors. So there are more essential fatty acids, like the omega-3 fatty acids, the fiber, the minerals, more antioxidants or phytochemicals in these diets that contain more plant-based foods. No single diet is optimal for everyone. So we can design diets that are that accommodate different people's tastes, but that overall will provide a healthy diet and help prevent disease. How are Quebecers doing? So there was a study in 2004 that examined Canadian food intake, and just this in 2009, the National Institute of Public Health in Quebec published the results. So in terms of fruits and vegetables, they're comparing these results to our food guide, which we'll get to later. But just in terms of how close are we to meeting the requirements, fruits and vegetables have been increasing. We've been eating more of them since the last survey in 1990. But one-third of people still do not consume the minimum recommended number of servings, which is 5 servings per day. In terms of milk products, intake is still low. 2/3 do not consume the minimal, that's Canada's food guide to healthy eating, the recommended 2 servings. So most people do not take 2 servings of milk products, so they're likely lacking in calcium intake. So that's a repeat. The low intake of whole grains still persists in Quebec. 2/3 of the bread consumed is white bread, so most people do prefer white bread or other sliced bread or any bread that is white rather than whole grain or whole wheat. Other foods, these are foods that are high in sugar, high in fat, they still make up about 1/4 of daily calorie intake. And since 1990, these foods, high in fat, sugar, or salt, are actually increasing. Drinks containing sugar that I mentioned before, which our body has difficulty adapting food intake to compensate for, those are also making up a large percentage of our daily calories. Sodium intake, which is receiving now a bit more attention from the government, the recommended limit is 2,300 milligrams, and 9 out of 10 people are consuming in excess of that. It's not difficult when you just take a look at food labels. Sometimes it's very surprising where you'll have something like canned tomatoes or tomato sauce. You can see a big variety in the amount of sodium, and it's a phenomenal amount that's added. My translation's a little bit half and half here. The bad habits of young adults from 19 to 30 years old. This generation, less of them eat breakfast. They drink more soft drinks and more alcoholic beverages and consume more fast foods. This is our young generation in Quebec. The elderly, I left in there to just highlight that they do not meet their fruits and vegetables, dairy products, and cereals. So I believe the men from this statement would be meeting their meat, consuming enough meat and alternates, but not enough fruits, vegetables, dairy products, and cereals. So not getting enough fiber, certainly, and also lack of vitamins and phytochemicals, antioxidants that they could benefit from. Women generally do not consume enough meats and alternates. If this is their source of nutrients that you would find in the meats or alternates group. Okay, so it's a little bit of cooperation. This is my first slide to my first piece of advice to recommend that you would go to a supermarket where fruits, vegetables, grains, plant foods take up the majority of the floor space in the grocery store, leaving little space for processed foods. The foods that are processed are high, usually in refined flour, so white flour, high in fat, in salt, in sugar, and packaged. So if your grocery store has fresh fruits and vegetables and a high turnover and the prices are good, you will be motivated when you go to buy them, and the variety is exciting. And also you might meet some people who eat more of a Mediterranean diet, and even the people who work there will help you and advise you on what kind of recipes you could stir up with the foods. So this is Adonis, if you saw from the previous. This is the one on the West Island. I like to go there. It's a little bit further than my other grocery stores, but it's exciting. I always try something new, and once I've got all this in my fridge, I can, you know, plan for the week. I can prepare fruits and vegetables, and they also sell nuts in bulk, so the prices are better for those as well. Okay. And they have a large variety of legumes, so not only kidney beans and chickpeas, there's a vast variety. And you can get them dry as well, along with whole grains like bulgur, couscous. They have from refined white flour, they have whole grain. They have all kinds of different varieties, different rices, and then their assortment of nuts. Some are salted, some are not. Okay. So now I'll just take a quick look at some food guides, and then I'm going to present you a new food guide, fairly new. So first we have Canada's food guide. It was created, the last one was created in 1992. It had the rainbow look. and it started to emphasize what to eat more of and what to reduce. So it had a bigger emphasis on fruits and vegetables and whole grains. And then the United States My Pyramid is a similar food guide, also emphasizing the fruits and vegetables and whole grains, but in a different design. The Mediterranean Food Guide, you may have heard of, it represents the way that foods are eaten in the Mediterranean area. And then I have a new vegetarian food guide, which is good really for everyone, not only for vegetarians, but for anyone who wants their diet to move towards something that is more plant-based and still ensure that you're getting all your requirements. So that's Canada's food guide, I'm sure you've seen. So fruits and vegetables, the largest part of the rainbow. The pyramid has actually the grains are the largest part of the rainbow, but they're close to the fruits and vegetables. The Mediterranean diet pyramid puts them all together. So your fruits and vegetables, all the plant-based foods are at the bottom. They make up the largest proportion of their diets. And then we have some fish, but at least two times per week. And then we have the meats at the top and also the sweets less often at the very top. Okay, so all these food guides are supporting the study, the WHO recommendations, but people are still having lots of difficulty meeting these requirements. So we need some kind of practical guidelines. And we need to, it needs to be made easy for us to incorporate these foods into our diets. We have a lot of forces around us that are, a lot of influence that's making it really difficult. So we need to really encourage and support those things that make us, make it easier for us. The new vegetarian food guide, I know it's difficult for you to see it, but the concept that I really like is that on the side, they've added a calcium-rich foods group. There is no group for just dairy products. So the dairy products are included in the protein-rich foods. And then that other group along the side has from each group, from your grains, you actually have on the side there the calcium-fortified breakfast cereal. So you could get calcium from there. And then the protein-rich foods on the side, you have a list of other the cow's milk, the yogurt, cheese. You have almonds, almond butter, sesame butter, cooked soybeans, tempeh. So they give you all the portion sizes for these other foods. And in next to the vegetables, you have those vegetables that are high in calcium. And then for the fruits, fortified fruit juices or figs. And so the guide recommends having 10 servings of the calcium-rich foods, but you're touching on such a variety of different foods that it would be easier for people probably to meet their requirements in calcium in following these guidelines, because we've seen that most Quebecers do not even consume the minimum 2 servings a day of milk products. Another representation of this food guide, this was published in 2003 as well, and this is from the Canadian Dietetics Association and the American Dietetics Association. So both of them together created this food guide for North American vegetarians. This one I think is a little bit easier to read. So at the bottom here, we have the calcium-rich choices that are from each of the groups. You have also different choices that you might not have so many examples of in the other food guides. So in the group called legumes and other protein-rich foods where you would have the meat, in this guide you have egg, meat analog, 1/4 cup of nuts, 2 tablespoons of nuts or seeds, some tofu, some cooked beans, peas or lentils. So there's a variety between legumes and nuts. I think from my experience, I think we've tended to avoid nuts, thinking that they're high in fat. And if we eat too many nuts, we're going to gain weight because they contain so many calories. But they're actually, if on a vegetarian diet, they are a good source of protein and a good fats as well. So by limiting other added fats, they're fine to consume, and we're also getting fiber from them. So it's a different way of eating. Some tips for meal planning come along with the food guide. If you want to look up the actual reference and get a copy for yourself, because there are a lot of tips that go along with it. So important, like I said, the at least eight servings from the calcium-rich groups. And they also recommend some omega-3 fatty acid servings, 2 servings per day. So they give some examples, some flax oil, very small amount of flax oil, some canola or soybean oil, ground flax seeds or walnuts. And they say, as I just said, nuts and seeds may be used in place of the fats in your diet. Be sure to have an adequate intake of vitamin D. That's for everyone. We don't have much sun exposure here. So through some fortified foods or from cow's milk, which is fortified, and certain other foods like breakfast cereals and soy milk. We should include at least 3 good food sources of vitamin B12 every day. And so there are some examples. If there are no animal foods, then there are other sources such as the nutritional yeast. And then they also have guidelines as to supplements, whether it's daily or weekly. Okay. And of course, the other items that are not in the food guide, the sweets, the alcohols, those are to consume in moderation. The guides give recommendations to meet around 1,500 calories a day. And so if someone has a higher need, then they just increase the servings. They also have some other food group variations and recommendations for other populations, children, adolescent, pregnancy, and lactation. So those are a few changes to make. Okay, so now I just want to go through sort of a typical day, the kind of foods that you might want to include in your day, some examples of how do you include more plant-based foods, how do you include whole grains, how do you know something is not refined. So this is one example here. You could have some hot cereal, but muesli is similar to hot cereal, but you really don't have to cook it. So it's... more difficult to digest in one way. So it has a low glycemic load. It takes you longer to digest it, so the sugars are released more slowly, and it will sustain you. And it's rich in fiber and all the antioxidants, other vitamins that come with whole grains. So how you know, if you look on the list of ingredients, the first thing is whole grain flakes, wheat, oat, barley, and rye. So you can't get any more whole grain than that. And then you do have some dried fruits in there. Some of them have a little bit of vegetable oil on them. All in all, this product is not that sweet and really tasty. So if you look at the nutritional facts, one cup, which is quite a big serving size for cereal, is 180 calories. You have not much fat, very little fat. If you compare it to granolas that you might purchase, they are quite high in fat to make them stick together. No trans fats. There is nothing in there to provide trans fats. The sodium is zero, and your fiber is 4 grams. So if anyone is on carbohydrate counting for diabetes, then a good thing, you know that carbohydrates are good because when you're calculating your insulin amount, you remove the fibers from the total carbohydrates. So when you see a lot of fiber, it's also sort of an indication that it's going to have a low glycemic load. These kind of foods also keep you full because of the fiber, slowing down the digestion process. Okay, this is another muesli. So another example where you have oat flakes, wheat flakes, barley flakes. So these are flattened grains. They look like oatmeal, oats, rolled oats. And then, again, some fruits and some nuts in there. Okay, here is a bread you might want to have for breakfast. Now, I'm showing these heavy breads, but you can find Country Harvest as well. If you look at the label, just make sure it says whole grain flour and not refined. Anything that says refined wheat flour, this will most likely just be white flour. And they may add some fiber, but you're losing out on some of the nutrients. Okay, so your best bet is to get something where the first thing at the beginning of the ingredient list is whole grain. The things they list first are in larger quantities than the things that come at the end. So in this case, we have coarse rye meal. So it's not even the flour, it's a meal. So you need to, in digesting it, it takes longer. So this would even have a lower glycemic load. Your blood sugar will not go up immediately after. It's going to sustain you. And then there's water, there's sunflower seeds, yeast. There's a very short ingredient list. So the fiber is quite high as well. You have 4 grams of fiber in one slice. So you could have 2 slices and you have 8 grams of fiber already. The goal for your daily fiber intake is 20 to 25 grams, which is usually very difficult to attain. But once you include whole grains, you can get there. Just in breakfast, you can be a good way into your recommendations. This is another heavy type of bread, but also full of whole grains. 6 grams of fiber per slice. And it's a little bit hard to read, but you have organic whole rye kernels. They're not even, they're still the kernel. They're not flattened, they're not ground, and that's mixed with water and some flour, which is a whole rye meal flour. So those are what I call whole grain breads. Another thing you could do at your breakfast is try to include a protein source, which will also help to sustain you. And slow down the digestion process. So I have examples like a low-fat yogurt. I have almond butter, peanut butter. These are natural ones where there's just the nuts. There's no added hydrogenated fat or sugars. And if you have some honey or some jam, then have it, even though the honey is sweet, because it's eaten in combination with other foods that have a low glycemic load, it will average out. The sugars from the honey will not be absorbed as quickly when it's eaten in combination with these other foods as compared as when if you're eating it all alone. If you're not certain how to find low-fat dairy products, all the dairy products have a percent milk fat on them. So this one is 15% milk fat, 52% humidity. The number you're looking for is that percent MF. So in terms of a cheese, 15 is quite low. Sometimes the lower ones are quite rubbery. So we can eat all these foods in moderation, so it's a matter of moderation and variety. Now, with your breakfast, if you have a good source of vitamin C, such as citrus fruits, most fruits contain vitamin C as well, and vegetables. This will help you absorb the iron from your plant-based, your grains. The other plant-based foods have some iron in them, and the vitamin C will help to absorb it better. Meeting iron requirements is a concern if you're eating more plant-based foods, because meats are very high in iron, as they're one of the best sources and easy to absorb. Whereas when you're eating plant-based foods, there's iron in many different foods, but not in as large a quantity. But if you combine them with an intake of fruits and vegetables, which are high in vitamin C, that will maximize the absorption of iron to meet your needs. This is just an idea of a snack. So for snacking, fruits, nuts, whole grain crackers, things that you might not think about, rather than maybe getting a chocolate bar or trying to find something in the vending machine when hunger strikes. This is easy to keep in your office. Maybe not together. The crackers might soften from the fruits, but I always try and have some little containers of these snack foods. If you're going to be eating more plant-based foods, a salad spinner is one of the greatest things to have, because then you can prepare your greens. It's much easier to preserve them and to have them quickly available to pack into your lunches. I love the salad spinner. This is some basil from my garden. I make some pesto in the fall and I freeze it. And herbs are eaten in large quantities in the Mediterranean diet. They're packed with antioxidants, phytochemicals that would help reduce the incidence, may help reduce the incidence of cancer. So we may not think of herbs, we think of them often as a garnish, but they're actually ingredients in some plant-based diets, like tabbouleh is made with a lot of parsley. These are my favorite legume products: black turtle beans, they're small black beans, and chickpeas, and the hummus that you can purchase. It's already mixed. Your chickpeas are blenderized. There's some tahini, some sesame butter, which is a source of calcium. And so it's really easy for the hummus just to take it for your lunch with other things with it. You can have some bread, you can have some fruits, vegetables. Everything seems to be good, fruits or vegetables dipped in it. Looking at the nutritional label, they are still another example of a plant-based food that's low in fat. Of course, no trans fats. All fats in foods contain some saturated, some polyunsaturated, monounsaturated. So the fact that we see some saturated is normal, even though it doesn't come from an animal food. Sodium is a little bit high, so rinsing these, or if hypertension is an issue, then soaking the beans overnight and cooking them could be a better option. In that case, you can always freeze them. Whether they're canned or prepared at home, boiled, you can freeze them in small quantities to add them to lunches, soups, salads. dips. Okay, and they're very high in fiber. The fiber that's found in legumes is mostly soluble fiber, and this fiber has been shown to reduce the glycemic load in people with type 2 diabetes to be very helpful. So there's an example of a lunch, very colorful, lots of variety, lots of flavor. So these are white kidney beans. I've flavored with some olive oil, some red wine vinegar, and some dried oregano. Then I've got some citrus to go with it to help absorb the iron. I've got my whole grain bread, and there's baby chicory that I like to put on the left, and other salad greens and carrots. This doesn't have it looks kind of small, but it's deep. And I actually had half of a humongous pita bread broken up into pieces. I've got spinach that I was able to wash and keep over a few days for my lunches. Some fresh dates, about half a cup of toasted sunflower seeds. And then with the lemon squeezed on top, it was really tasty. And then I have... This one was really, really fun making. So I'm using here the hummus as the spread. Instead of using margarine or butter, I'm using the chickpea spread at the bottom to help it all stick together. Then I've got lettuce, I've got mango, cucumber, there's some sunflower seed sprouts, tomatoes, the beans, those are the black beans, black turtle beans, and some salsa. So rolled it all up and created a wrap. This soup is really simple to make. It's not my best picture, but it's just some corn, whether it be frozen or canned, and also some black beans. So you can have a can of corn, a can of tomatoes, a can of black beans together. And then I seasoned it. There are some onions in there and some broth that I had kept. I keep broth in the freezer. And then I added some cumin. So it's kind of a Mexican flavor. This is a container that I prepared to freeze because I cooked some barley and some wild rice, and then I put it together with some tomatoes. I have chopped up onions and carrots. The green is actually some soybeans. You can buy them frozen, the fresh soybeans that are green. So I can keep this in the freezer, and when I need some soup, I just boil it up. So when you prepare your ingredients, you can plan ahead and have a... Boiling will reduce the content of vitamin C. Yes. Vitamin A, it's better for vitamin A, and lycopene, it increases the availability. So some vitamins are effective in a positive way and others in a negative way from the cooking process. This is a wild rice. This is a Canadian native delicacy, high in fiber. This is another soup. That's the one that you just saw in the container that was to be frozen after it's made. That is the hummus, and also, well, it looks like chocolate, but it's actually black bean dip. The hummus is really good with apples. And when you're hungry, a little bit of low-fat cheese, I find, with fruits, vegetables, and maybe a couple of crackers, I find the cheese really makes a difference. When you get home and you're hungry, some low-fat cheese or some nuts. This is a stir-fry using, again, the soybeans. The bok choy in the background is one of those high-calcium foods, vegetables. Okay, I'll have to stop soon. There's quinoa. That's interesting small grain that's very nutritious and has a nutty taste. It's not much longer than cooking couscous to prepare quinoa. There's a white one, and there's also a red quinoa, very small grain. This is tempeh. This is a fermented soybean cake that you cut up. You need to fry it or heat it first before you consume it. It can go into spaghetti sauces. We do that with the students. They love the labs. They love all the foods that they learn to eat. This is a simple dessert. So in many countries, the Mediterranean and Asian countries, sweet dessert is not part of their culture. to be had at every meal. So it's a habit, of course. We want to end a meal with something sweet. But with time, as we change our habits, it becomes easy. We find things too sweet. So this is vanilla yogurt, low-fat yogurt with berries, or with a sort of a trail mix, some bananas, and a little bit of maple syrup. This is a berry crumble, which was made with whole large oats. Not very much brown sugar, but a lot of frozen berries, full of antioxidants. That's a baked apple, so very easy. What can be easier than making baked apples? And berries. Doesn't it look appetizing? Are we hungry? You haven't had lunch? In summary, these are some recommendations that are also included in the WHO report, so a little bit more than diet. First of all, avoiding the high-calorie foods that are loaded with fat and sugar. Avoiding drinks that are rich in free sugars because they reduce your appetite control. Each additional can per day increases the risk of obesity by 60%. So each can of pop, of regular pop, increases a person's obesity risk by 60%. You should try to avoid weight gain of more than 5 kilos in adult life. And so I'm at my limit, believe it or not, already. For those with sedentary occupations, try to walk 60 minutes a day to maintain your healthy body weight and prevent obesity. Usually the recommendation is walking 30 minutes a day, but that might not be enough to prevent obesity or to maintain the weight that you've lost. When we lose weight, when we cut down on the amount that we eat, our body's smart and wants to slow down its metabolic rate. And also we may lose some protein mass. So we end up with a lower metabolic rate. We need less calories. So to counteract that, when we diet, we need to exercise. So part of the recommendation, the reason for the 60 minutes a day, is to maintain more muscle mass to increase your metabolic rate. So whether you walk 60 minutes a day or you do some strength training, that would help to increase your metabolic rate to avoid regaining weight. And it doesn't have to be all done at once. If your job incorporates a lot of walking, but it's not a straight 60 minutes, then that still counts. And housework counts as well. We should avoid snacking, because usually snacking leads to people eating more. On one side, it could be beneficial to help with type 2 diabetes. You have less carbohydrate being absorbed at one time, and you can maybe manage it better. But usually snacking, people will end up eating more. So maybe avoiding snacking, avoid binge eating, and eating out, well, that's a real challenge. But there are choices. There are healthy choices in many, many restaurants. It just takes trial and error sometimes. Increasing fiber intake. A good goal to have. Create an environment that's supportive of healthy eating choices. So less packaged snacks, sweetened drinks, and more fruits and vegetables. If those are available at home, if those are in your environment or in your cafeteria, then you're going to be much more likely to choose those foods. And try to promote active lifestyles and diets starting at an early age. Because those habits we develop as children are, food is more than just nutrition. Food has a lot of psychosocial elements tied into it. So we eat for comfort. We eat because these are recipes that we grew up on. So there's a lot of psychology around eating. So the way we grow up is really important. Strive to have meals together as a family. When we don't eat together, we eat whatever we can find, sort of thing. We put things together quickly. It's not planned. May not be healthy. So let's strive to have meals together. It may mean leaving out some other things that are maybe important to us, but to try and make our family meals together important. limiting TV and computer time where there's a lot of advertising for foods that are refined and processed, and also the limiting the inactivity that happens when we're on the TV, the computer, and the technical gadgets. So those are my take-home recommendations, and I'm sure a lot of you have questions, so I will be sticking around for 15 minutes.
We can actually share some questions if anyone has any they'd like. The first hand that went up was right in the back at the, yeah. You can turn on your mic, please. Just press the button.
Until Hello, thank you for this very interesting presentation. I'd like to ask you, I was not at the beginning, did you tell the amount of fibers that is recommended per day?
It's 20 to 25 grams per day.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, I'll let you.
Hi, I have two quick questions. One is, do you have the reference for the Dietetic Association publication, if you can give that to us?
Yes.
And the second one is, really and truly, he was joking about the recipes, but do you have any recipes to hang out? Some of those were great, but who can remember them?
I'll have to figure a way. I am working on a book, but I do have a food lab manual, which is for the students in Food Fundamentals, which is full of really
Maybe
good
we can
recipes.
Get that reference and we'll put it on our campus community okay. website.
Okay, okay. It's on one of the slides. Yeah.
Thank you.
What do you mean by energy-dense food?
Foods that have a lot of energy in a small volume, and that's usually because they're high in fat and sugar. Okay. And they would have less fiber. They've been refined. So fiber doesn't contain any calories. It increases the volume of the food. So it and also water. In fruits and vegetables, there's a lot of water. So the energy dense would have no water and no fiber and would be rich in fat and sugar.
I have two questions. What would be an example of 20 to 25 grams of fiber? And what are your thoughts on food combining? I've noticed you combined fruit with protein and vegetables, mm-hmm. and I've always had the impression that we have to be careful about how we combine certain food products. So mm-hmm. if you could mention something about okay. that.
So the 20 to 25 grams, well, some of the breads that I showed had 4 grams of fiber per slice. So if you had, you know, in essence, if you're trying to meet 25 grams of fiber, if you divide it into 3 meals, you would need to aim for 7 to 8 grams of fiber per meal. The bread we've covered, the fruits and vegetables, a cup of vegetables or fruits per meal would provide you about the same amount as the bread. So you're looking at needing to incorporate plant-based foods at each meal. So a variety from the food group. So you have some of each of the food group. Mm-hmm. I'm not finished the question.
And the food combining.
Yes. Yes. To help absorb iron, the iron from plant foods is better absorbed when there's vitamin C present at the same time. So that's one of the recommendations that as dietitians we always make. Some minerals compete for absorption. One example is calcium and iron. So it's interesting that in a kosher diet, milk products and meats are not eaten together. So this gives greater capacity to absorb calcium and iron when they're separate. It's interesting, but you can still absorb enough iron and calcium even if you are combining them, eating them at the same time. Okay, but if someone was iron deficient, it would be one thing that you might look at, would be consuming your milk or your yogurt separate from the meat in a plant-based diet, in an animal-based diet. Okay. Other food, I don't promote any other food combinations or diets.
I own three teenagers.
And they own you.
That's right. And wife and I come home at 6, and they come home at 4:30, starving. Mm-hmm. And they raid our house, and they're looking for food. Mm-hmm. And we want to buy food that's healthy for them, but they just raid the Cocoa Puffs and the and the chocolate bars. What do you recommend as a holder before a healthy supper? This family supper you talk about.
First of all, are they having breakfast and lunch?
I force them to. they have a breakfast, a cereal usually. And the lunch, either it's a $5 bill because they want to buy lunch at school. I don't know what school gives nowadays at lunch. Mm-hmm. And twice a week they make a sandwich in the morning. So that's the lunch. Mm-hmm. But from 12 to they arrive at 3:30, 4 o'clock, they are starving.
Right. Yeah. Usually a lot of people are starving because they haven't eaten enough earlier in the day. So trying to maybe have more at breakfast or bring to school. I have a lot of the same problems. I have the problem of getting home like half an hour before I'm supposed to be serving supper. So having stuff prepared ahead of time that you can quickly put together takes a bit of planning. For them, for the snacks, have more of the foods, more of the good foods and less of those foods that they prefer, I guess. It's an ongoing struggle. White rice, the converted rice, is actually a little more nutritious than the white rice. Converted is parboiled. It's already been steamed, and the nutrients have gone in before they've removed the fiber. And it also has a lower glycemic load. It's a little more difficult to digest. But the white rice does not contain many nutrients. Yes. Yes. I think it's refined, but I'm unsure. I'd have to verify that. Depends on, you can know by looking at the amount of fiber in the nutritional facts. There is definitely riboflavin from the color. And the fiber, the amount of fiber. Yeah, it would have to be more than 1 gram. There is whole wheat pasta available made from whole grain, which it's almost the same color once it's cooked. When it's raw, it looks a bit brown, but once it's cooked, you can hardly tell the difference.
We don't want to keep you all from your appointed tasks today, but I wanted to thank you very much for coming in.
You're welcome.
And we'll try to get that reference and maybe a few teaser recipes up to tease people into buying your book.
Okay, yeah.
Thanks very much. Thank you all for coming.
Yeah, I could do the be easy.